You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Everybody, how you doing? Welcome to PHLY Flyers, presented by Mortgage CS. Check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to start your home buying process today. Company NMLS ID number 1464766. My name is Bill Matz. I'm your director of fun and games for the afternoon.
There we go.
Joining me today, not only Philadelphia's number one hockey beat reporter, Charlie O'Connor, but also Broad Street Hockey's own Kelly Hinkle. I'm all thrown off with the intro today. I forgot to say, well, that's good, because I was already thinking ahead to the afternoon thing.
Everything's weird now.
Yeah.
It's evening somewhere.
It's evening. Yeah. Is that evening. What we want to go with? It's evening somewhere?
Yeah.
Evening, it's always the vibe. Evening.
Yeah.
It's a state
anyway,
of mind, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go to mortgagecs.com/PHLY. That's just, you know, to get that out there. I'm calling today F Around Friday.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
I have this idea for stupid topics once a week, but we haven't like really dove in everything, like deep dives on every player or anything yet.
No,
it's not
yet.
Like it's July, August. F Around Friday today is going to be all the players whose names begin with F.
There are a few.
There are a number.
There
are
more than a couple.
Farabee, Frost, Forster, Fedotov. I mean, there's enough. We are the Flyers, after all.
Look at that.
So we're going to dive into those guys today, the seasons they had, what we expect from their off seasons, the future, all the rumors, etc. But first, on this F Around Friday, we're going to look at the first round of the Stanley Cup final.
You're really committing to this bit.
I'm really committing to it.
I love it.
It's the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And man, the East is exactly as lopsided as we expected.
It's kind of annoying, actually.
It's very clear looking at the two conferences that I think the top East teams are just as good as the top West teams.
Oh, yeah, like two or three of them.
But the first round was always going to be rough.
Yeah.
Like, I think we went into it and we were like, all right, Carolina is going to blow out the Islanders. The Rangers are going to blow out the Caps. Yeah. Boston, Toronto should be fun because both those teams are good.
And
then Florida and Tampa could be if Tampa shows up.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping they were going to be
man,
better.
Like, that had the potential to be good. Yeah. It does not appear it's actually going to be.
There's been like moments in the Tampa Florida series where you're like, man, Tampa's getting it together. And then like Bob makes a save, play goes the other way, Kachuk scores a goal. And you're like, yeah, they're just like out of steam. And I know everyone like, yeah, screw Tampa. They had their moment. They had their run.
Yeah.
I do always get like, I don't know about wistful, but when I see a dynasty, like, oh man, it's over.
Dying.
Like,
yeah.
It'll never be this group again. And we got so used to this group, like every spring for how many years it was this group of guys.
Yeah.
Like Stamkos is still unsigned.
Still
we'll
very
see how that goes.
His status,
Hedman, we're talking about signing him in 2 years already, you know? Like it's just a group of dudes who might not be together again. And it's, I don't know, it's a shame. But also, when one of these things happen, I want someone to take it from them.
Yeah.
And Florida is absolutely fucking taking it from them.
Yeah, I feel like this series is, and we all knew it on some level. we all knew that Florida had surpassed Tampa as like the team to beat in that state, the team to beat in that division, that it was now Florida,
yeah.
that they are the team. But the last two times Florida and Tampa played each other in the playoffs, Tampa won.
Yeah.
There was an element of you still wondered if Tampa, because you've talked about it on the show before, that Tampa's one of those teams where they've learned that you just get in and then in the playoffs you can turn it on.
Uh-huh.
And you wondered like, okay, maybe Tampa is still Tampa. They were just sandbagging a little bit in the regular season. And what we're seeing in the series is like, nah, Florida's just a lot better now.
Yeah. Like, they didn't have Vasilevsky until December this year,
yeah.
and then he wasn't really Vasilevsky for most of the season. It was like, all right, but they'll get it together in the playoffs. And it's not like they've been bad.
No, it's just Florida's
but
really good.
The series, better, is, yeah. the series is what it is. Like, yeah. it's 3-0, and it deserves to be.
I will say it was kind of fun for, like, 10 minutes in that first Carolina Islanders game. I was like, oh, God, are the fucking Islanders going to do this? Is this actually going to happen? And then Carolina was like, no.
No.
Sorry. We just forgot to start.
Yeah.
We're good now.
I mean, I'll be honest. I watched probably about 2 minutes of hockey last night because I was flipping back and forth between the Sixers game and the NFL draft. So hockey, because it would have been different if one of these two series was not 2-0.
Right.
But my thought process was, even if the underdog wins, at best it'll be 2-1, and then I'll care about game four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to care that much when it's 2-0 and this game doesn't really have a lot of leverage beyond the team that's up 2-0 trying to basically drive the stake through the heart of the team they're playing. So I didn't watch much of either of those games. I did watch most of game two of the Canes Isles,
mm-hmm.
and it felt like that was the game. Like, the Canes trailed for a lot of it, but I think they let in shot attempts like 105 to 20.
It was 100 to 0. Yeah.
Like, it was in game one, you're like, oh, maybe the Islanders can hang with this team. Game two, even though Carolina was trailing and there were score effects, you're like, oh my God, Carolina is playing a different sport
than
this team.
Score effects don't account for an like 90 shot attempted.
No, it was like a peak absolute Canes game for sure.
And like last night, the Islanders might have played like their most complete game. And they still lost.
No. Yeah.
This first round in the East is a joke.
It's not great.
Yeah.
And you asked me, Kelly.
The first round in the West, though, is great.
Yeah, no, it's real good. That's why last night I was like, how didn't they so you had all these games up against like the start of the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't a late game. Like pick 25 to 0. Like there was the second and third period would have had nothing up against it, but you decided and I get like a lot of teams don't own their rink, and there's different, like, there's concerts, there's NBA playoffs going on, so you might just not have a building to play a game in. It's out of the NHL's hand in some regards, but goddamn, give me a late game. There needs to be one late game every night. There's four series going on.
I was mildly surprised there was not at least one West game last night. I was kind of bummed, but the positive for me was I was able to go to sleep at 11 p.m.
It was nice. Like, it is nice. This schedule we're on is
great.
That
was nice. Got a good night's sleep.
But, Kelly, you asked me before we started, like, with the Rangers-Cap series.
Yeah.
How bad would the Flyers be getting beat by the Rangers? I'm not telling you it wouldn't be 2-0, probably 3-0 after tonight. They'd look better.
I choose to believe the Flyers would have won at least one game.
They might have got swept, but it wouldn't look like, oh man, they're old and slow.
No.
Like, that's not what it would look like.
No, they would have given it to them.
Doesn't Ovechkin have like one shot on goal in the series?
It's not great.
It was like halfway through game two that he got his first shot, I think.
It's wild.
Like, the guy who shoots.
Right.
The guy who shoots is not shooting because he's just
he's never has the puck.
He's not fast enough anymore to get to the puck when you're playing as a team like the Rangers, who was a very good team all year, won the President's Trophy, and it does appear, I guess I'm not going to say it's definite because it might just be the quality competition, but it does seem like they may be hitting another level.
Mm.
I thought in game two, the Rangers didn't even play that well, and they were still dominating the Caps, and you're like, well, shit, imagine what happens when this team starts playing well.
You got like Keandre Miller getting shorthanded breakaways and shit.
Second round's going to be pretty sick, I think.
The second round in
second round's gonna be real
could
good.
Be real good.
Oh, I mean, Carolina Rangers is going to be awesome. But I have to ask you, Kelly, about your Leaves.
The Leaves.
Oh, the Leaves.
Is this... I realize, like, some things just, like, sometimes it just doesn't go your way, and the playoffs is a short sample and all that. But at a certain point, when it's the same core group
Yeah.
Don't you just have to go, like, we have to change something?
It's wild to me that Keefe didn't get fired when everyone else got fired.
Yeah.
I don't think he's very good at coaching this hockey team.
I've heard a couple people. It might have been the Justin Bourne Kuiper show.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument that was made on that show was that it might have been Nasty Knuckles, but the argument was it was some former player who was basically saying that one thing that bothers him about Keefe is just how obviously agitated he gets on the bench. Mm. And not from like a Tortorella, like performative, I'm going to scream and yell at the refs, but like he is obviously sweating.
Yeah.
And like clearly looks like he's in the middle of a mental breakdown on the bench. And the guy was like, the players noticed that shit, and it doesn't do a great thing for the players on the bench's vibes, because they think like, if our coach is cracking, like, well, shit, this is a really, really stressful part of the game, rather than the coach is kind of being that, like, you know, the calming presence on the bench,
right,
who doesn't like lose his shit at the first sign of trouble.
Even Tortorella, who is an insane person.
Yes.
Like at those points, he'll do the thing where he calls a timeout and not even talk.
Yeah.
Like, you guys got this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to put it. You got it. You know what to do. Like, and that he's got that smirk where you're like, is he going to kill someone?
Yeah.
But also like, it's got to be the calming. Like, okay, we've practiced this. We've gone over it in film. We know the thing that we have to go do to go play our game. And then there's Keefe, who's just like, fuck, it needs four cigarettes at once.
Yeah, he does look like that. And I mean, I'm not going to speak to his ability as a coach.
Obviously,
Kyle Dubas thought very highly of him. He had him in juniors, then had him with Toronto when he was the GM. He clearly has enough going for him that a brand new GM showed up and decided he didn't want to hire his own guy right away.
Yeah.
So there must be a lot there that is impressive behind closed doors. But I do think it's reasonable when you're hearing it, especially from former players who have been on the bench at the NHL level, and they're like, I don't know if I love that mentality and what it could be doing to the guys, especially in big games. I'm not saying it's definitely the answer. I'm just saying that it's worth not brushing aside out of hand that it could be having a negative impact, given the fact that the Leafs have made a habit out of not coming through when the stakes are highest.
Yeah, I just think last playoffs specifically, a lot of what happened was Keith failing to adjust, like make adjustments in game in that series. And it was just very surprising to me when everyone started getting fired. I'm like, all right, well, Keefe's definitely getting fired because he's not been that great anyway. And
they kind of went through their lull. Oh, he's next.
Yeah, and it's just weird to me that they didn't fire him. I would imagine if they lose this series, he's going to get fired.
It would make sense.
It would be wild if they didn't fire him at that point. I would assume he's got pictures of someone if that doesn't happen. But the Leafs are they're very Flyers-like. In their way that they like
just
to
like
do
the
same thing over and over again.
Like,
and just like nonsense, cursed bullshit that doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no reason why this team full of those guys, like the guy who scored like, more goals than like anyone has in years.
Now, goaltending has like that outsize effect on the outcome of games. And in
and
a seven
Boston's
games,
Boston's goaltending has been sick.
Like, and like in a seven game series, a goalie can just absolutely shit all over your best laid plans. But like, Toronto is so much better on paper than the Bruins.
Yes.
It's a joke. They would kill for Tavares and he's like a shadow of himself.
Yeah.
You know? it's just
pretty wild.
It's so weird how this plays out for them every year. And against this team too, which makes it so fun.
It's only 2-1.
By the next time we talk, this could be a different conversation.
And we are talking about, like, your lead to this was, when do we have to talk about that there's something wrong with the core? Well, one of their key core players isn't playing because he's dealing with migraines.
Yeah,
and I think it's generally speaking accepted by Toronto fans, at least the intelligent ones that I follow, seem to believe that Mitch Marner is nowhere near 100%.
No, he does not look great.
According to Jeffler, he is hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not going to give them a pass because they've lost pretty much every other year. But if you're going to say, well, what's wrong with the core? Like, what's wrong with the core is Nylander can't play and Marner isn't healthy.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with the core.
That definitely probably has an impact,
I would say.
Before we get to that super chat, let me tell you about our friends at Trumark Financial Credit Union. I've told you about this. Listen, I I don't take financial advice from me. Yeah, like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
As you lead into an ad read for like, financial
but company. That's why, you know, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I had to do some actual research, looking into Trumark and looking into, like, what credit unions are. And when I looked into it, man, the difference between a credit union and a bank, the differences were pretty eye-opening. When you join a credit union like Trumark Financial, you become part owner, which means profits come back to you instead of going to shareholders. You get better rates, lower fees, a better return on savings, and more flexible options with all the same digital tools and tech we come to expect from our banking partners. Trumark, maybe the most important thing about them, they've got local roots. They're headquartered in Fort Washington with 24 branches in the Philly area. They serve our community and our people right here at home. And becoming a member of a credit union has so many benefits over becoming a customer at a bank. Almost seems like a no-brainer. So head over to Trumark.com/PHLY to learn more or find a branch near you. That's Trumark.com/PHLY. Federally insured by the NCUA. Before we get to F Around Friday now, let's see. Is that Gary B? We have a super chat. Happy Friday, Bill, Charlie, and Kelly. Let's fucking go Flyers. Yeah, man.
Thanks,
I mean,
bud.
Thanks, Gary.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your super chat contribution.
He also loves the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shirt.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I am a large child.
And that's why we love you, Bill.
Anyway.
Literally why you're going to
play. It's F Around Friday, so we're going to talk about the players whose names begin with F. And let's start with Joel Farabee, the tale of two seasons for our buddy Joel.
I think he's a good person to start with because there's going to be a lot of chatter about him this offseason.
There's rumors swirling. Yeah, we're like seeing articles pop up. Obviously, whether it's local or national people, we've heard his name at least mentioned.
Right.
First 48 games for Joel Farabee. That's October 12th to January 23rd. 17 goals, 40 points, 0.6, and a plus 11. That's a 68-point pace for the first 48 games. That is pretty damn good, especially on a team with zero power play that basically never scores. You know,
he was one of the best 5-on-5 scorers in the league, both goal scoring and point production through those first 48-ish games.
Yeah, he was. When you looked at the 5-on-5 production, it was like, oh, it's like him and all the MVP candidates.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then in the final 34 games, January 25th to April 16th, 5 goals, 10 points, a 24-point pace.
Seems like he never came back from the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened. If he got, it doesn't seem like he was injured.
I was going to say, we didn't hear anything about it.
He's playing in the World Championships, so this is not something you do if you are secretly nursing an injury.
One would think.
He's playing for Team USA. I don't know what happened, but whatever it was, he completely fell off a cliff from a production standpoint, and it was also by the eye test, too. Like, there are some guys where you're like, they're not scoring, but they're doing all the other things. Like, Farabee's play just on the whole dropped off.
He
it
just
was very
wasn't
weird.
Noticeable, and that's why I noted here his penalty minutes. It's not as if he's like going to be in a bunch of fights. He's not the most physical guy.
He does fight sometimes.
He has dropped the gloves before.
Yeah, more than you would think.
Yeah,
more
than when it happens, though.
He's American. He'll drop the gloves now and then.
Fair enough.
But in those first 48 games, 29 penalty minutes, 0.6 penalty minutes a game. Those final 34, 8 total, 0.24. I'm not saying, like, I didn't break down what his penalties were, but that speaks to me like a little bit of, he stopped attacking. Like, he stopped being aggressive because when you're aggressive,
match with the eye test.
When you're aggressive, sometimes you cross check a guy, sometimes you trip a guy. Like, you're in someone's way and you interfere. And then when you have basically no penalties for 34 games, you know, 4 minor penalties basically, that means you're not nearly as aggressive. Yeah. And is that just what it comes down to? Like, we know how much he scored on the rush, how much like he was a contributor on the rush offense. Did all those things just kind of combine to, like, what the hell happened to Joel Farabee in the second part of this season?
It's an interesting theory about the rush offense because he was very good at creating. But what I loved about Joel Farabee,
not even just scoring,
especially in the first half, what I loved about him was that when he had the puck on a transition rush, you truly did not know whether he was going to shoot or pass, which made him a nightmare for goalies to deal with, because he could pass the puck and he could set up a teammate for a slam dunk goal, or he could beat the guy clean. And you know, you have someone like Owen Tippett, like, well, yeah, he's going to fucking shoot. Even Konechny, you're like, yeah, he's probably going to shoot. Yeah. Farabee, it was 50-50. And I think his success on those plays spoke to the fact that he was truly unpredictable for goalies. It's an interesting theory that you bring up, that when the rush offense started to dry up a little bit, they weren't getting as many two-on-ones, as many three-on-twos, that maybe Farabee struggled to adjust and create off the cycle the way that the rest of the team struggled to create off the cycle. It's just that so much more of his offense was off of the rush that when it dried up, he really, really dried up.
Yeah, that rush drying up really fucked the entire team pretty good.
And but I will say, in the past, Farabee, he's not, I'm not saying he's Wayne Simmonds, Mike Knuble, or anything like that, but he does have a variety of ways to score.
In theory, he does. He has the skill to. Yes.
He's not small anymore. He's not huge.
He's bulked up a bit. He can stand to put on some more muscle, but he's definitely gotten a lot bigger than he was 3 years ago.
He's not the slowest dude. Like, he can beat you in a variety of ways, and we saw that a lot in that first part of the season, but it seems like when one thing went away, everything went away.
Could have just been a confidence thing, too.
Yes.
One thing I found interesting, and we talked a little bit about this after the exit interviews, and I am notably a Joel Farabee fan. He was the guy I wanted the Flyers to draft in his draft year, so I'm really excited about that. I like his game. I like his style. One thing I did not like, though, was some of his comments at exit interviews, mostly because it seemed a little bit like he was, and you could tell kind of in real time that he started out by talking about how, well, my role changed. And then kind of like midway through his answer, he was like, but it's on me, you know, but like, it just struck me as like his first instinct was to blame the fact that he was playing down in the lineup at the end of the season, which is true. By the end of the year, he was on the fourth line. The thing was like, this was not a like, he had his role change and then his production dropped.
No, yeah.
This
was the other way.
His production dropped for a while, and then they moved him down the lineup because he wasn't scoring ever. And I really hope that he hasn't retconned it in his head to believe that it was the other way around, because like, his role declined and his minutes declined because of the lack of production. It wasn't the role's fault that his production dropped. Like, and I hope he hasn't convinced himself that he wasn't mostly to blame for this, because he was mostly to blame for this. And I say this as someone who really likes Joel Farabee as a player, but like, if he's wondering why he was on the fourth line the final 2 weeks of the year, like, he has to look into a mirror. It was him.
As a guy that covers him, does he strike you as the kind of guy who would do like a Provorov, where he's just like, obviously this isn't my fault as everyone else's?
I definitely do not think he would ever do that.
Okay.
He is definitely a team guy. He is a very good teammate. But I could see him getting very frustrated with Tortorella and then letting that maybe bleed into his play.
Like, from a pure depth chart analysis perspective, buddy, you almost have like top 6 minutes guaranteed to you, because you're the only fucking natural left winger.
That's a really good point.
Like, if your role changed, it is simply because they could not play you on the first line anymore. Yeah. You are the only left winger on the team.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, he's like top six, because they were using Tippett on the left. But top six, absolutely.
They're trying to figure out who else they can put on the left, because it's a team of right wingers.
Exactly.
He's the only left shot winger that they have. And all of a sudden, you're on the third or fourth line? Nah, man, it's because you're not scoring.
Yeah.
Like, they need you up there. You are a necessary component of this team, especially right now, because there's no one else who plays your position.
So here's what I will say about Farabee, and this is what I'm going to try to interpret his season to be, given the benefit of time. You can do the chop it up into two halves, and that's fair, because he did drop off significantly. But if you're trying to evaluate his true talent level, we probably should look at his season as one singular whole.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did.
Yeah.
That's who he is. It's the same thing that I would argue last year, where it was like, you can't just throw out the first 30-something games of Morgan Frost's season because he played in those games. You can't just say they didn't happen. They happened. And if you're going to evaluate where he is as a player, that has to be included. It's the same thing with Farabee, where I look at his full season numbers and I still do see a guy that on the whole, if you're looking at overall his season, he did take a step forward. His points per 60 of 5-on-5, ranked 55th amongst NHL forwards. That's solidly in even strength top liner territory. At the very least, it's solid second liner territory. He made a jump in terms of his underlying 5-on-5 play. He ranked in the 65th percentile by impact on expected goal differential at even strength. That's not amazing. It definitely was higher in the first half of the season, but it's still pretty good. It's in that like solid middle six area where you'd want a guy who's a second, third liner. So on the whole, if I'm evaluating his season as one singular season, not two halves, I would say that Joel Farabee on the whole played like a good second line winger. Now, do I want him to be better than that? Of course I do. And in the first half, he showed that for 4 months, he can be better than that. But I'm okay at age 23, 24 for Joel Farabee right now to be a second line winger. I just want him to keep improving from that point.
So that's actually a really interesting thing to think about, because if we flip those two halves, like we're having a completely different conversation.
That's a really good point.
I was going to say, yeah. If we compare it to like Tyson Forster, who like one of the bright spots of this season was Tyson Forster. He didn't score a goal for the first 15 games.
Yeah.
And then he got hot, kind of cooled off again. And then he had a few really good months. April was but you know, the whole team sucked.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, Forster, I love this dude. Yeah. And Farabee, I'm like, ooh, yeah, kind of for the first time, wouldn't mind if he were to be true, you know?
Recency bias is one hell of a drug.
I was going to say, really, so good at recency bias as humans.
But it's just like the way you look at it, and it's, well, you know, when the games mattered most, but like I said, down the stretch, yeah, that eight-game losing streak killed them, losing, what was it, you know, 11 or the last 13 or whatever it was, killed them. And,
not good.
You know, if they beat the Sharks in October, though.
Different conversation.
They don't shit the bed against Ottawa twice in the first half of the year, they're in the play. Those games count too. They count just as much. But you always remember the ones at the end because that's when the race is.
Yeah, and that's when the games have the obvious stakes rather than just the implied stakes. And that's something that Travis Konecny mentioned in exit interviews where, you know, he more or less said one thing that he's going to take away from this is that bullshit game in November matters, has just as many points attached to it as the important game in April.
Yep.
And we cannot take even one night, not even off, but just like, it won't matter. We'll catch up later. Like, you can't do that in the NHL, especially when you're a team like the Flyers that's very much on the bubble.
If you're
like, maybe if you're if you're Florida, it's like, whatever. We're going to go on a 10-game winning streak at some point.
You're down 2-0 with 2 minutes left in the second. It's like, oh, dude, can we just go get to our dinner reservation? Like, if this goes to overtime, I'm good. Yeah. You know? Like, no, you're not good enough to think that way.
Yeah. But I think the important part about this season in the short term for Joel Farabee is, what does it do for his status on the team? Because it's abundantly clear, and this isn't just a local thing, these are the national insiders as well, are mentioning his name as someone who, and this is my read on it, I do not think the Flyers are actively trying to trade Joel Farabee, but I do think the Flyers realize that if they want to get the high-end talent that they say they need, and they do believe they need it, it's not just us, they believe they need it too, they're not just going to be able to like trade Ryan Poehling and get it.
No Hagen.
They're going to need to give up something with serious value. And Joel Farabee, I just said, on the whole this season, he performed like a darn good second line winger. If you look at the season as a whole, there will be teams that will be very interested in making a hockey trade for a 24-year-old who is already a quality second line winger on a not ridiculous contract, who still could take a leap into being a clear-cut first liner.
Yeah.
He will have value. And if the Flyers decide they want to take a big swing on a guy, Joel Farabee, more so I think than like someone like Cam York, someone like Tyson Forrester, they would be willing to give him up to make that kind of move.
Yeah, I think that's kind of why these rumors aren't, I think, surprising at all to anybody, is because of the whole recency thing, because you can look at the season as a whole and be like, I guess we could probably, like, there's probably other parts that we need more than we needed this year's version of Joel Farabee, especially a center. So like, as much as we would like to just give up four or five shitty hockey players to get one good one. It doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
So like you said, Farabee is, I think, a good enough piece that if you are trying to make a hockey trade for a position that you need help in, like center, he's an obvious, I think, building block for that trade.
Yeah, like you're not going to, and I know we keep bringing up Trevor Zegras. It's not even necessarily because Trevor Zegras is the only guy. It's just he's a guy who's theoretically out there. He's an easy person to throw out there. Like, you're not going to get Trevor Zegras for a package centered by Bobby Brink.
No.
Like, that's not going to happen.
It would be cool if it did.
And, like, I know we've referenced this trade a bunch this week, but I think, what did the Flyers need in 2009? Number one defenseman. How did they get him? Lucas Pisa, who was a first-round pick. Joffrey Leupel, who at the time, after the 08-09 season, he was 25 goals, 50 points.
Mm.
Yeah, it's Farabee-ish.
Exactly,
interesting.
Almost Farabee-ish. Exactly what Farabee just did, you know?
So what you're saying is... We're gonna get.
This is the kind of guy who it kind of takes to do something like that. Like that good, real good second line dude. Yeah.
So the one reason, I mean, aside from the fact that I just like Farabee's skill set, I would be bummed if they traded him. Now, obviously, if they traded him for
a Hall of Fame defenseman,
or just like a really, really good young player, you'd get over it fairly quickly, especially if that really good young player immediately comes out and is great right off the jump. But one of the reasons why I would be hesitant to trade away Joel Farabee is that I do see him, I saw it last year, especially at the beginning of the year, and then really throughout the course of the year, you can see him developing into a leader. You can see him developing into a guy who the young guys look to. You know, he spent all of last summer in the Philly area. He was training like crazy at the facility.
Everyone lives with him, right?
He's like the guy who opens up his house to everyone. Mm-hmm. He is kind of a social leader, but I don't get the sense that it's in like a like Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, we're going to party every night social leader. Like he keeps it fun, but not like too crazy where you're worried that any of these guys are actually doing any work at all.
Right.
I would be hesitant to trade a guy who I think could develop into a guy who is one of the cornerstone leaders of this team. Yeah. Not saying I wouldn't do it. I'm just saying it's a factor you want to keep in mind because it does appear that he is over time developed. I heard multiple players when I talked to them about leadership, that multiple guys, multiple veterans who on and off the record were like, yeah, Joel's like, people are looking at Joel. I just think it's something the Flyers should keep in mind that, you know, maybe don't be too quick to dump Joel Farabee because he had a bad second half.
No. And I don't think, I mean, you guys went through all of Danny Briere's moves yesterday. And like just looking over that, obviously a short list of things that he's done so far, the vibe isn't that he's going to just like give up.
It took an hour and 17 minutes to get through that short list.
Yeah. I'm assuming that if a trade is made involving Joel Farabee, it's not something that we're going to be upset about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade him for a draft pick.
Right.
Like, unless it's like the eighth overall pick, right. And then like, sure, I guess.
Dope. Yeah. Cool. That's fine. It might even be as good as Joel Farabee. Before we move on to our next F Around Friday guy, let's talk about Rite Aid. Listen, it's that time of year. Trade rumors. No, birds are chirping, grass is growing, hockey playoffs. That means eyes are watering and throats are scratchy. Everyone out there who's been listening to the show for the last few weeks and months knows I'm an allergy sufferer. You can hear it in my voice on plenty of days. Pollen from trees, grasses, and weeds are a primary cause of seasonal allergies. Symptoms flare when the pollen you are allergic to is in the air. It's possible to be allergic to just one or several types. Allergies suck, man, but there are steps you can take to help alleviate some of your allergy symptoms. First, sign up for Rite Aid Rewards emails at riteaid.com/rewards to receive email pollen alerts for your area. If the pollen count is high, try to stay indoors. Keep windows and doors closed and run your air conditioners as needed. And remove your shoes and coats near your door to minimize tracking pollen inside your home. And take a shower before bedtime to help wash away pollen from your skin and hair. And of course, you can visit your local Rite Aid to stock up on over-the-counter allergy solutions like a nasal rinse or antihistamines. Still not enough relief? Ask a Rite Aid pharmacist if a different type of allergy medication, like a decongestant, might be necessary. You can always ask your Rite Aid pharmacist for recommendations on ways to get relief during allergy season. Visit your local Rite Aid today. Stock up on allergy relief or catch up on immunizations for RSV, shingles, and more. Walk in or schedule a vaccine appointment at RiteAid.com. All right, before we move on from Farabee, gut feel, is he here in October? And is he here when Mishkov gets here?
Yes and yes.
If he's here in October, I would say that yes, he's going to be here with Mitch.
Okay.
I think he's going to. I don't think it's, like, I'm not ruling out the possibility he gets moved. Mm-hmm. I think he is available. They are not hanging up the phone. But as I said on one of the shows this week, they were not hanging up the phone on Morgan Frost last summer. They were certainly not hanging up the phone on Travis Sanheim last summer. Like, just because someone is available in theory does not mean that the Flyers are going to get the kind of call that will drive them to actually pull the trigger. I do think they like Joel Farabee. I don't think he's a guy they are itching to trade. I just think he's a guy they are open to moving in the right deal. If I had to bet, I would bet that right deal doesn't come around. But if it comes around, it wouldn't shock me.
All right. Morgan Frost.
We got a super chat. Jump into Morgan Frost, yes, let's do a super chat.
Super chat from Matt Chipman. Hey guys, big fan from Canada. Great work. Who's your ideal 1C or 1D trade target in a potential Joel package? Lawton and Joel for Tim Stützle?
I would do that, but there's no way Otto would.
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
We got a guy there. Maybe he could.
You
think he's a mole?
Truthfully, my dream trade, which again is another trade I do not think is going to happen, would be Quinton Byfield.
Oh.
You've been on him, yeah.
I think he's great. And he's not even playing center because they have so many centers. But I think LA realizes that he's real, real good. And they're not going to move him.
All right. That would be an interesting one. Who would be if I could get anyone? Yeah. Man, I
haven't thought hard enough about that.
Just because, like, it's so funny, I want Trevor Zegras. Like, if we put that guy with John Tortorella, it's hilarious.
You know who I really like? And, like, it killed. I think it might just be because, like, every time he played the Flyers this year, he was fucking good.
Uh-oh.
I really like Alexis Lafreniere.
I was wondering,
like he killed the Flyers this year.
I was wondering, like, obviously now they probably are like, oh no, he's good.
Yeah, right.
Like him there or Kako, if you could somehow steal one of them.
Yeah, just jump in that time machine.
Yeah.
Return it back to last summer and then make an offer that last summer would have seemed overwhelming.
Yes.
But after this season, it'd be like, nah, we ain't doing that.
Yeah. Is there any universe, though, in which those two teams make a trade? I don't know.
I mean, they sent Lindros there.
That is true.
That's true.
I don't know if they've made any trades since then. It was like 25 years ago, but, you know. All right, Morgan Frost. Man, what a ridiculous season for the saga of Morgan Frost. He was scratched for 7 of the first 13 games this year. January 4th against Columbus was his 11th scratch of the season. And I said this name to you guys before the show. You know, in that January 4th game where Torts was making the point and he scratched Frost and scratched Atkinson against the Blue Jackets, they dressed 11 forwards. One of them was named Rhett Gardner.
Rhett Gardner.
Create a player.
I can't believe how quickly I erased that name from
my
mind.
Seriously, it had been completely erased from my consciousness and will be again after today.
So in the 35-game stretch after that, from January 6th to March 26th, 7 goals, 29 points for Morgan Frost. He really turned it on after he came out of that scratch with a goal and an assist and was just really good up until the final 9 games. He had 1 goal, 0 assists, and played 8:02 in the final game. I am shocked that we haven't heard, oh yeah, Morgan Frost has gone up to Danny and be like, get me the fuck out of here, man. Like, I just, like,
maybe he has.
And I think that maybe speaks very, like, highly to his dedication to both the team and, like, believing that Tortorella isn't bullshitting him when he says, I'm doing this to make you better. Like, I actually think he must believe that. Otherwise, he would have just been like, dude, trade me. What are we doing here? But
I don't know. Charlie says everyone likes it here.
They love the guys.
That's what
they
mean.
They love the room. I mean, he's best.
But, like, this is
he's best
buds
with Joel Farabee. Have you seen those pictures when they do the hands? Like,
yes, they're very.
How is he extremely like bros for life?
How is he ever? How's he ever supposed to get a big raise if the coach doesn't like playing him?
Yeah,
like, this is bad for his career.
I think you underestimate, like, just how, like, good of a dude Morgan Frost is.
He seems like a very nice
He's
dude.
He's a very nice boy.
Which I think was nice which still go, but, like, I want to be a millionaire.
But I think that was part the reason, like, the fact that he is a very nice boy, now a very nice man, was one of the reasons why Tortorella tortured him as much as he did, because he wanted him to yell at him.
He's such an asshole.
I know. There's something wrong with him. We talked about this before the show. Like, Tortorella's got to stop proving points. Like, no, all like, of the points have been proven.
That game where they dressed Rhett Gardner, they dressed 11 forwards. Two of them were Delorier and Rhett Gardner.
No more
so
points.
So effectively, he went with 9 forwards to prove a point.
To prove a point.
Yeah.
But granted, like, the Atkinson scratch was warranted because he stunk for most of the season.
But what I'm getting at is I could see Morgan Frost, one of the reasons why he doesn't want to leave Philly is because, and like, this is such a like non-ego driven reason. It's like, well, you know, they drafted me. I wasn't a lock to be a first round pick. They believed in me.
Every hockey player developed me.
Two GMs ago.
You know, they developed me. They gave me my shot. I was injured and they still stuck with me. But like, that's the kind of person that he is, where like he feels, I think, a sense of loyalty to the Flyers.
Hockey players are so stupid.
Frost, I get the sense, is that kind of person.
Then he needs to hire an absolute psychopath agent.
Yes.
Like Ari Gold coked out of his mind is who he needs as his agent. Yeah.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I feel bad for him when Torts does the shit he does, because it's like he just seems like a nice dude, and Torts is just like poking and prodding him with sticks.
I need you
also
to be
pretty good. Like, could we stop pretending he's not good either?
Yeah, run us through some of these numbers, Charlie, with like where he kind of ranks.
Yeah, so by the numbers this year, he grades out pretty darn well. I thought the big jump he made this year was in terms of his two-way play, because my argument was before this season was that the point production, like, yeah, he's a pretty good even strength scorer. I'll grant him that. I want to see more on the power play. But yeah, end of the year, points were good, especially in the second half. If he's not driving play, he's mostly just a hollow point producer who doesn't produce points at an elite level. Mm. And I don't know if I want to save a spot for that guy on a contending Flyers team. This year, his two-way play got substantially better. He was in the 86th percentile by impact on expected goal differential, which pretty darn good already. But here's the eye-opening one. The 80th percentile among forwards in terms of defensive impact. And he's generally viewed as an offense-only guy.
Yeah.
This version of Morgan Frost, the guy who, you know, can score at a solid middle sixer center level and also drive play at a first line level, I'll take him on my team any day of the week. This guy, not like last year's Frost, I'm like, eh. If this year's Frost is the real Morgan Frost, he can be my third line center any day. On like a true contender, he can be that guy for me. And he can be like almost like a 2B to a 2A if you get that true 1C.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine. If this is the real Morgan Frost, then, you know, maybe all of those tough love meetings and conversations, it's turned him into a better 2A player, because maybe he's never going to be a great offensive player. He'd be a good offensive player. Maybe he's never going to be a great offensive player. But if he can be a good offensive player and be a great play driving center, yeah, I'll take him on my team any day.
I want so much more from this kid. Like, he has so much, like, raw skill. Like, his
passing
skill
is
with the puck is, I think, better than anyone on the team, except maybe Bobby Brink, and Brink still has a way to go.
Yeah.
And granted, again, this is a low bar to clear for
Yeah, like,
team.
It's going
to
be very funny if Morgan Frost is still on the team when Michkov gets here.
Even if, like, if he's second and Michkov is first, it's like, there is no second.
Yeah.
You're eighth, and the next guy is, you know, Morgan Frost is your top, or Michkov is your top nine. And then after that is everyone else. Now, it's just like, I don't understand why he doesn't produce even more points. Some of it is the power play.
Yeah.
But as we said all year, like, you're going to have to be that guy, especially for this team. Now, granted, he did lead the team in power play goals.
He was pretty good on the power play this year. I mean, as good as you can be on like, the worst power play ever. But, no, he was better on the power play this year. The reason why I'm harder on Frost with the power play than I am on, say, somebody like Tippett, is because I will always view shooters on the power play as more or less the product, unless you're like Ovechkin. But I more or less view shooters as the product of the playmakers.
Yeah.
I expect the playmakers to drive the power play.
Yeah.
And Morgan Frost is a playmaker. I want him to be making the power play better, whereas I'm more willing to forgive a Tippett because it's like, well, if they were set up in the zone more and someone was passing him the puck, he'd have more goals. Frost is the guy that should be passing him the puck, so I want more out of him on the power play. And maybe I'm being a little torts here, or I'm holding him to an unfairly high standard on the power play, but I just want more from him on the power play because I think he has the skill when his team has one more skater than the other team to make more plays on the cycle when he's set up on one of the half walls.
That's the, like, if you're not the most physical guy, if you're just kind of more of a skilled, like, that's your time to shine,
exactly,
man. And everyone else needs to do their part as well.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
They had Igor Zamula on power play one for a lot of the year. That's not exactly the way.
Can I blame Rocky for this?
What?
I did. Can I blame Rocky for this?
I mean, you can blame Rocky Thompson for anything if you really want to.
I sure can.
I did like, there you go. Yeah. I did like, though, and this was maybe for about a 2-3 week period, Frost, I thought, looked pretty good in the bumper.
Mm.
That was an interesting,
he did.
An
they
interesting
were moving
experiment.
Him around, like he'd be
I like the bumper.
He'd be in the bumper. He'd be on the wall. Like that's when they there was like a 2 or 3 week period where there was motion on the power
yeah,
play.
Where we said
it wasn't
play,
the worst.
It looks visually better.
Yeah, visually, yeah. It was better. Yeah.
I want you all to check out the Bet Parks Sportsbook app. Just perusing the Bet Parks Sportsbook right now.
Love to
checking
peruse.
Out some NBA futures and. Maybe you're a little pumped up after last night's Sixers win. I'm looking at to reach the Eastern Conference Final. Sixers all the way down at +550. If you think they can, I don't know, maybe get through the Knicks, maybe something goes wrong for the Celtics, who's to say? It might be worth checking out, but everything at the Bet Parks Sportsbook is worth checking out. They have all the futures you want, all the game lines, NHL playoffs, baseball every day, NBA play, everything you're looking to bet on is available at the Bet Parks Sportsbook app. So get in the zone with Bet Parks Sportsbook. Money is in the moments. What events are coming up? I just said, man, like this is one of the best times of the sports calendar where we have multiple big games on a daily basis. You want to have a little skin in the game. You want to get a little action going. Well, guess what? If you win your first $10 bet at Bet Parks, you can earn $125 in sports bonus bets. You play for fun. You love to win. You bet. Download the app and play along with us. Must be 21 or older. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right. Before we move on, we do have a super chat.
We got
a Frost-related super chat. Frost exit interview, he seemed to really like and respect Torts. Is there a disconnect between what the fans think and what the players actually think? So, Lorne Michaels, Mr. SNL.
Love the show.
SNL what if guy, it was really him?
Big fan.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Actually, I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent to SNL these days. They had a couple, it was like 2 weeks ago they had a good
really
episode. There were a bunch of clips that I watched that seemed funny.
I
don't really know what exactly you're asking in this question, but if you are implying that we are wrong in thinking that there are players who don't like Torts. No, we are not wrong. There are players that don't like Torts. And I do think that, like, yes, Morgan Frost is naturally, I think, something of a people pleaser. And he does want to earn the respect and love of John Tortorella. However, I do think Morgan Frost, if you put him on a lie detector, would he much rather be playing for a coach who like actively him? Gave him positive reinforcement?
Yeah,
probably. I think he might like that a little bit more.
Yeah, if you're at the Phil's game with him and Joel, he's probably not like, you know who I miss?
John
Tortorella. I wish he was here.
I'm picturing, you know how at John Tortorella's exit interview, it's like he took accountability, but not for any of the stuff you think he took accountability. There's players who don't like John Tortorella, and it might not be the players you think don't like him. It's a bunch of guys, and it's not even the ones you think.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, I mean, listen, every stop along the way, John Tortorella has had plenty of dudes who don't like him. But you hear from his former players, there's a lot who were like,
a lot who really like
him. You hear, like, he stripped the C off of Vinny LeCavalier, and the owner had to step in and be like, I'm not getting rid of either of you, so figure it the fuck out. And, like, now they talk all the time, and they're buds.
Did you listen to the full Cam York exit interview?
I did
where
not.
He had that one. It was really funny. Like, I actually think, like, Cam York is an interesting Torts person because I think Torts loves Cam York. I get the sense Cam York, like, is in constant eye roll mode whenever he's around John Tortorella. Because,
I can see that.
Because there was a line Cam York goes, and he's like, yeah, I've just learned not to pay attention to anything Torts says. And then, like, me and a couple other writers in the room just start, like, laughing. And then he looks and he's like, oh, no, I mean it a good way.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, he's from Southern California. Say, he just, like, doesn't give a shit.
But the thing is, like Torts really likes him because he, especially this year, loves the more intense style of play that he turned to this year. And I think the way Tortorella looks at it is, I got through to him. And Cam York is just like, oh, this fucking guy.
Because there was
it was you.
It was all
it
you,
was
too.
You, John.
Keep telling yourself there.
That, bud. Yeah. But, like, John, he must look at it like, I challenged him last year when he did not make the team out of camp, and now look where he is.
Yeah, yeah.
2 years later, he is our best defenseman.
Yeah.
All because of me.
All John because of John Tortorella. Yes.
I'm just saying, I don't think that's Cam York's interpretation.
No, that is not Cam York's interpretation.
I must believe he believes he did it himself.
Yes.
Let's get to Tyson Forster.
Okay.
20 goals, 33 points in 77 games. Now with 85 games in his career as a total, 23 goals, 40 points. Not a bad, like, you know, rookie season plus 3 games, basically. But it didn't start great, at least in terms of the production. No goals, 3 assists in the first 15 games. Then he goes on a 55-game stretch of 20 goals, 10 assists from November 18th to March 30th. Then, of course, in the final 7 games in April, 0 points. But a 20-goal rookie season is pretty damn great.
Pretty good.
It's tied with Umberger, Gagne, and Bill Sutherland for 14th most by a rookie
Legends.
In franchise history. It's the most by a rookie since Matt Reed's 24 in 2011-12.
Meet Reed.
Jeff Carter is a rookie, 23 goals. Tim Kerr is a rookie, 22 goals. Pretty good company here.
Not bad.
The guys were noting, what do we think Tyson Forster's ceiling is? Like, at points this year, I mean, he was, if wingers could possibly get recognition for the Selkie, he was grading out really well defensively. He ends up with 20 goals. Like, I'm not saying, oh, yeah, you put him on a first line, set it and forget it. But if it's like Michkov, a legit 1C, and then him, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
I feel like the Evolving Wild Twins say that he should probably get both Calder and Selke recognition?
By their model, the RAPM model, he graded out as the second best defensive forward in hockey behind only Jason Robertson of Dallas.
Show me the lie.
So
who am I to argue with that?
So there's that.
They know how to do math.
Look, by underlying metrics, Tyson Forster,
he's real good.
He ruled this
and
year.
And John Tortorella, when he wasn't scoring, and we see how he treats these scorers who don't score. Brink, you're going back to the minors because you had a bad week and a half. Morgan, I'll talk to you in, you know, 2 weeks, whatever. We'll see. Tyson Forster never came out of the lineup.
Yeah. This was one of those situations where, like, I've made this comparison with Torts in the past, in that I compare him a little bit to Pat Gillick, in the sense that Pat Gillick famously hated advanced metrics. He thought sabermetrics was a joke. He thought it was stupid. It was ruining the game. But the thing with Pat Gillick was that Pat Gillick actually was a good enough baseball scout. Like, he had the baseball eye that, like, he really didn't need the numbers. He could watch Jason Wirth and be like, I see a 35 home run guy, and be right. He was that good. John Tortorella, I think, is kind of similar in that he also is not very into analytics, but his eye for talent is good enough that he can recognize just by the eye test who is a good analytics player. I think with Forster, he recognized what the numbers picked up without even looking at the numbers, that, like, oh shit, this guy is a great 5-on-5 player. And that's why he stayed in the lineup for forever.
And I'm excited about Tyson Forster.
Me too.
Like, he's actually a guy. I know that when they drafted him and he started to come along, Charlie, you said, you know, the Flyers believe they have a potential star, a potential maybe first line guy in Tyson Forster. And you said he's definitely good. I don't know if he's that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that now?
I mean, I'm definitely seeing what I guess they were seeing, you know, a couple years ago when I was like, if you're talking about him as a star, I think you might be overshooting a little bit. I didn't realize he had this kind of two-way potential. I truly did. And I watched
him. I mean, that's
him.
A hard thing to know.
I just didn't think, like, I thought he could be a break-even. I didn't think he was going to be a liability. I did not think I would be seriously considering the possibility that Mark Stone could be an outcome for him.
Ooh.
Like, that, and I mean, it's the most obvious best-case scenario comparable because, number one, they're both wingers. Yeah. They're both relatively slow. Like, their biggest weaknesses is the skating ability. They both can score, but not at a, like, I don't ever think Tyson Forrester is going to be scoring 100 points. Mark Stone is not a 100-point scorer, but Mark Stone is a 70-plus point scorer who drives play to such a ridiculous degree that his team outscores the opposition like crazy whenever he's on the ice. Tyson Forrester, I'm not saying he's definitely going to be Mark Stone. That's a very lofty comparison. Mark Stone is the second best player on the team that won the cup last year, and it sure looks like they might win it again this year.
They are a borderline playoff team without him.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and they're beating up the Stars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like making the Stars look silly.
So I'm not saying he's definitely going to be that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that based on his first season, I think it's a plausible outcome. It could happen.
It's on the table.
It's on the table.
Yeah.
It's on the table.
Not saying it's like, oh, yeah, that's happening. Yeah. But I'll take that. I will take Mark Stone light.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, give me 80%.
I will take
Mark
Diet
Stone.
Stone like
Diet Stone.
M-A-R-C Stone, you know? Like,
get Olipop on the
not
line.
The hard K.
Yeah.
M-A-R-C Stone.
Yeah.
I will absolutely take that out of a dude. They got it, what, 20th overall? What,
yeah.
22nd?
Yeah, I don't know the exact pick.
They
the
are so good in that, like, 20
yes,
to 24 range.
They really are.
Maybe they should, like, be a borderline playoff team all the time.
Yeah, everyone shut
it's
up.
It's when
about
they
that.
Pick second.
They're good at the
it's
late
when
round.
They pick second that they fuck up.
Never yeah. good at second.
Oh yeah, we're picking what seventh, and we got Ivan Provorov. Cool.
24th, and we get Travis Konecny.
Yeah. 22nd, we get Claude Giroux, one of the best players in franchise history. Fourth, we get Joni Pikkanen. He was all right
for a little bit.
That's the thing. That's the thing. The Flyers don't want a top five pick. You don't want them to have one. It's not good. For them.
I would take my chances with one. Honestly,
that'd be cool.
Listen, it's Friday. We're almost done work. I know what I'm going to be doing when I go home.
Are you going to be chilling?
I am going to be chilling, man.
Yeah.
I am going to be chilling with an ice cold Coors Light. You know I love to chill with my Coors Light because there's no better way than to do it with an ice cold Coors Light. So whether you're freaking out about, oh, is Morgan Frost going to be back? What can they get for Joel Farabee? Is this guy actually going to be? Could Tyson Forrester actually be Mark Stone? You
yes.
need to find the Blue Mountains
or
in your fridge.
Or if you just want to celebrate
yeah.
one of the rare, really good Philadelphia sports days that happened yesterday.
It was rare, man.
It doesn't happen
celebrate.
Often. Maybe okay. happens like three times
just
a year.
Kick back and chill, man.
Phillies win, Eagles draft the best cornerback on the board, and the Sixers make it 2-1, and they're back in the series, and Joel Embiid scores 50 points.
Zach Berman, you earned yourself the Blue Mountains in your
that's
fridge.
That's right. PHLY yeah. Zach Berman was the one who reported the pick before any other Eagles beat writer.
Insider.
Good job, Zach Berman. Well done.
You
got to
find
it.
Those Blue Mountains in your fridge and enjoy a beer as cold as the Rockies. When you choose to rise above it all, choose chill, choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/PHLY hockey. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, before we get out of here, we're going to close it with the mailbag question
Ooh,
of the day.
Hey-o.
Dan Knightley, I'm sorry we didn't get to your question yesterday. We will get to it at some point
Friend
this offseason. But today we go to Chris Fiore, and he asks, hypothetically, if Lawton gets traded and Atkinson gets bought out, Johansson goes to IR, do the Flyers go within the system for third and fourth liners, or even the extra forward with guys like Rizzo, Eklund, Avon, Tuomala, Desnoyers be call-ups? Or would they go out and sign the Mark Stahl equivalent at forward? If they are going to do that, might as well not buy out Atkinson.
It's an interesting point.
It is. I would hope that they just go, you know what, Bobby Brink's an everyday player. We're going to give our young
that
guys,
nice.
Even if we rotate these young guys, like, bring them
like
up, see
rotation,
how they do,
yeah.
send them back down. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you're no good. 2 weeks, let's see someone else. Like, if the playoffs aren't the goal, I know they want to play these meaningful games, but we just saw that. Man, like, use this time for something. Don't just waste this time.
Rotating those guys in would be the dream for me.
But they don't think they're ready. Like, that. This is Desnoyers is the only one who I could
see. I was
going
to say, like, if he's not ready now,
if
he's never going to be ready. So let's see.
If he has a good camp, I think he could make the team. But if he just had a really disappointing season.
He did.
Like, you don't want to be like, well, we need to play kids because it's a rebuild. So here you go, Elliot Desnoyers, who scored like 5 goals this year in the AHL. Go play.
I know, but I really want him to be a thing. Has anyone considered that?
His name's fun to say.
It is.
He plays for the Mooseheads.
I want to fuck with Jim Jackson and have Desnoyers and Delorier on the same team.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, that'd be rough.
Yeah, I mean,
poor Jim.
Why not mess with Jim Jackson? No, it's just like, if they're not ready to be NHL full-timers, cool. You telling me they couldn't handle a week in the bigs?
Yeah, let's see.
Like, that. When are they going to, you know? Just because a burger isn't medium doesn't mean it's not medium rare. Yeah.
I think the one point I will disagree with about Chris's scenario, theory, yeah, whatever, I don't think if they buy out Cam Atkinson, I don't think it is in large part because, like, well, we have a logjam, we need the space. That's
no,
part of it.
He's no good.
It's because, no, I don't even, I mean, that's obviously part of it. It plays into it. But
they
I think it's in part
him.
Because, in large part, it would be because they do not feel like they can guarantee Atkinson regular playing time, and they want to give him the chance to catch on with another team who will give him that playing time.
Yeah.
I think they would view a buyout almost as, like, cutting him a little bit of a break, because if they, like, your theory is basically, well, why not just keep him? You won't have the buyout the second year and just keep him around as a 13th forward. I think they would feel like that's being unfair to Atkinson.
They respect him too much.
They respect him too much to keep him around just because they don't feel like having the second year buyout and have him play 30 games. I don't think they would want to do that to him. Now, will they go out and sign somebody else after they buy out Atkinson? I think it just boils down to whether a guy who is available is interested in coming to the Flyers and they like him.
In a, like, known rebuild.
Like, I don't think they necessarily thought that Garnet Hathaway would have been interested in becoming a Flyer.
I'm pretty sure they told us that.
And then they found out he was, and it was like, oh yeah, this guy fits. Like, sure. If there's another Garnet Hathaway who expresses interest through back channels via his agent or whatever in the weeks leading up to the start of free agency, they might go out and get one. Or maybe they take on a salary, they take on a center to get a draft pick to basically just plug in there, especially if they trade Lawton. That could be an option.
Yeah.
I would much prefer that to going out and signing someone.
I guess I don't love the framing of that question because there are so many variables that could play out this offseason that I don't think it's as simple as, well, just let the kids play. Because number one, there ain't that many kids that are ready. Not even in the, like, Flyers overcooked them. Like, again, Elliot Desnoyers had 6 goals in 63 games this season. I don't think he's ready for the NHL. Samu Tuomala fell off a cliff the final two months of the year. I don't think he's ready for the NHL. Massimo Rizzo, I don't even know if he's a good AHL player yet. I'm not going to dump him in the NHL without any seasoning. Like, there are a lot of guys who, like, J.R. Avon, he was like a bottom sixer in the AHL last year. Like, did I like what I've heard about how he looked? Sure. But I'm not ready to just, like, I don't want this rebuild to become, just play all the kids because we want kids. Like, no, they have to earn it.
What about Rhett Gardner?
Is he real?
Is he still on the Phantoms? Who can say?
Who's to say?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. All right.
We got
one more super chat before
Gary
we get
B.
out of here. Gary B., I met Tyson Forster.
He told
me.
Role model is Ovi. I can kind of see. Well, like, yeah.
I think that's a ceiling.
If you're a
Alexander Ovechkin.
That's definitely a ceiling. Uh-huh. Best goal scorer ever. Yeah. That's Tyson Forrest's ceiling.
It's a fair expectation.
He's a goal scorer. Obviously, yes. If you've spent your whole life as a goal scorer, you're going to look up to, like, literally the best goal scorer of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I get that.
Let's put him in the left wing circle on the power play. Yeah, exactly. Go to work.
Yeah, it's like if you're a center fielder, like our age, like obviously you grew up wanting to be Ken Griffey Jr. Like, sure. No shit.
We're Shane Victorino.
Or the Flying Hawaiian. Yeah.
One or the other.
One or the other.
All right. If you want your question featured in the mailbag question of the day, tweet it at @PHLY_Flyers.
But going back real quick to that, the mailbag question. Like, I just don't, there's a middle ground between playing kids when they're ready. Like, for example, like if Lixell's still part of this, I would love to give him a 60-game look next season and see what he is. That would be fine by me. But I don't want to just give Elliot Desnoyers a spot because, well, he's a prospect that we know and it would be more fun to watch him than to watch Nick Deloria. I want these kids to earn it. I do not think Elliot Desnoyers this season came anywhere near earning it.
What if we used Wade? Never mind.
Ray Allison. Wade.
Anyway, that is all the time we have for you on PHLY Flyers today. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for hanging out. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. Follow us right here on YouTube. Never miss a live show. Hint, we're going to be at one pretty much all summer. So sure. make sure you clear out time in your day for that. Follow us on Twitter at @PHLY_Flyers. Everywhere there are podcasts, PHLY Flyers. My name is Bill Matz. For Charlie O'Connor and Kelly Hinkle, you have a great weekend, Philly.
We all silly like the mayor.